Ante. At the end of observing the vow. Kartike. In the month of Kartika. October, November. Masi. In that month. Atriratram. For 3 nights. Samuposhitaha. After completely observing the fast. Snataha. After bathing. Kadachit. Once upon a time. Kalinjam. On the bank of the Jamuna. Harim. Under the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Madhuvane. In that part of the Vrindavan area. Known as Madhuvana. Archayat. Worship the Lord. Translation. In the month of Kartika, after observing that vow for 1 year, after observing a fast for 3 nights, and after bathing in the Yamuna, Maharaj Ambarisha worshiped the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari in Madhuvana. That's interesting. I was just commenting on that, how people translate Madhuvan and Madhuvana. It's actually Madhuvana would be the right pronunciation, because the A is not long. If it was long, it would be Madhuvan. But since it's a short A, it's Madhuvana. Got it? It's interesting, anyway. You can still go back to Godhead. What?
Is the mic on?
The mic is on. But it is very low. So, Madhuvana. Okay, anyway. Enough Sanskrit. Yeah. So, this text has no purport, so we're going to read the next text. Next two texts, and the next three texts after that, and then we'll get to purport. So, Mahabhisheka Vithina Sarva Paskara Sampada Abhishicham Barakalpar Ganda Malyarhanadibhi Todgatantara Bhavena Ujayam Masakeshavam Pramanam Cha Mahabhagan Siddharthanapi Bhaktitaha. Following the regulative principles of Mahabhisheka, Maharaj Ambarish performed the bathing ceremony for the deity of Lord Krishna with all paraphernalia. And then he dressed the deity with fine clothing, ornaments, fragrant flower garlands, and other paraphernalia for worshiping the Lord. With attention and devotion, he worshipped Krishna and all the greatly fortunate brahmanas who were free of material desires. So, texts 33 to 35. Gavam rukma vishanindam rukyangrinam suvasavam suvasavam prayashiladayo rupa vatso paskara sampadam prahinotsara vipretyo raheshu Nyar Bhutanishat Bhojitva Vishanagre Alfadvanam Guna Vartamam Lobdakamaranu Yata Paranayo Pachakrame Tashatariyatiti Sakshat Durvasa Bhagavan Abhut. Thereafter, Maharaj Ambarish satisfied all the guests who arrived in his house, especially the brahmanas. He gave in charity 60 crores of cows whose horns were covered with gold plate and whose hooves were covered with silver plate. All the cows were well decorated with garments and had full milk bags. They were mild-natured, young, and beautiful, and were accompanied by their calves. After giving these cows, the king first sumptuously fed all the brahmanas, and when they were fully satisfied, he was about to observe the end of Ekadashi with their permission by breaking the fast. Exactly at that time, however, Durvasa Muni, the great and powerful mystic, appeared on the scene as an uninvited guest. This is the wrong moment, or right moment. Text 36. Tam anarjita titim bhupa pratyupanasanarvanahe yache vyava haraya paramuhulam upagataha. After standing up to receive Durvasa Muni, King Ambarish offered him a seat and paraphernalia of worship. Then, sitting at his feet, the king requested the great sage to eat. Pratinandya satam yachnyam kartum avasya kam gataka nimamaja brihad tlatyayan kalindi salile shubhe. Durvasa Muni gladly accepted the request of Maharaj Ambarisha. But to perform the regulated ritualistic ceremonies, he went to the river Yamuna. There he dipped into the water of the auspicious Yamuna and meditated upon the impersonal Brahman. Text 38.
Muhurtardavasishtayam dvadasyam charanam prati chintayam asa dharmakyo vijastadharma sankate.
In the meantime, only a muhurta of the Dwadashi day was left on which to break the fast. Consequently, it was imperative that the fast be broken immediately. In this dangerous situation, the king consulted the learned brahmanas. And finally, text 39-40.
Brahmanati krame dosho dvadasyam yada parane yat kritva sarume bhuyad adharmo va namam sprashet ambasha kevala lenata karishe vatta paranam ahor ap vakshanam vipra yasitam nasitam chyachatat.
The king said, to transgress the laws of respectful behavior toward the brahmanas is certainly a great offense. On the other hand, if one does not observe the breaking of the fast within the time of Dwadasi, there is a flaw in one's observance of the vow. Therefore, O brahmanas, if you think that it will be auspicious and not irreligious, I shall break the fast by drinking water. In this way, after consulting the brahmanas, the king reached this decision, for according to Brahminical opinion, drinking water may be accepted as eating and also as not eating. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
When Maharaj Ambarish, in his dilemma, consulted the brahmanas about whether he should break the fast or wait for Durvasa Muni, apparently they could not give a definite answer about what to do. A Vaishnava, however, is the most intelligent personality. Therefore, Maharaj Ambarish himself decided in the presence of the brahmanas that he would drink a little water, for this would confirm that the fast was broken, but would not transgress the laws for receiving a brahmana. In the Vedas, it is said, Aposhnati tan Anayavashitam, Naivanashitam. This Vedic injunction declares that the drinking of water may be accepted as eating or as not eating. Sometimes in our practical experience, we see that some political leader adhering to satyagraha will not eat but will drink water. Considering that drinking water would not be eating, Maharaj Ambarish decided to act in this way. So, Om Gana Tivrandasha, Gananjana Shrakaya Chakshur Miditam, Vena Tosmai Shri Gurveda Maha. So, here we see Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni, of course, is a partial expansion of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva, of course, is known as Ashutosh. Ashutosh means easily pleased and easily angered. So Durvasa Muni has these particular qualities. And we see that he shows up at various times that to test people. For example, he showed up to test Draupadi. He showed up to test Draupadi when Draupadi was in the forest with the Pandavas. And basically, she had this pot that was given to her by a great sage that could feed any quantity of people until the Pandavas and she had eaten. And so, Durvasa Muni, of course, this was actually Duryodhana's plan. Duryodhana actually sent Durvasa Muni to try to harass the Pandavas. He thought he was going to curse the Pandavas. And he sent Durvasa Muni right when the Pandavas or after the Pandavas had eaten. So that was one test. And of course, Draupadi, she passed the test because she cried out ultimately for Krishna. Krishna came and ate the speck of rice that was left in the pot, and Durvasa Muni and his 10,000 disciples became completely full, and they had to run away because they were afraid of offending Maharaj Yudhisthira, because Durvasa Muni remembered this particular passage that we're going to be reading about in the Srimad Bhagavatam, of how he offended Maharaj Ambarish, and then he almost got killed as a result of that. So he didn't want to offend Yudhisthira Maharaj by not eating when Yudhisthira Maharaj was serving the prasadam. So anyway, that's etiquette. And then other times Durvasa Muni shows up, for example, with Kunti. He showed up at the palace of Kunti Bose, who's Kunti's adopted father. And he tested Kunti. Really, he tested her in extreme ways, because Durvasa Muni is known to ask for something to eat. And then when you cook something, he said, "I'm not hungry anymore. Let me go to sleep." So then he would wake up in the middle of the night, and what he would do? What would he do? He'd ask for fresh prasadam. You couldn't say, "Well, can we just heat up the leftovers from your last meal?" No, you couldn't do that. You have to cook immediately. So Kunti was able to do all that and satisfy him in so many ways, and as a result, she got that wonderful mantra where she could call any demigods, and demigod. It was a seduction mantra. In other words, they would come and give her a kid. And that's the beginning of the Mahabharata story. So anyway, so Durvasa Muni comes to test, and in this particular time, there is a test given to Ambarish Maharaj. And we devotees get tested in this way in many ways, not by Durvasa Muni, but we get tested in the sense that we have different conflicts. A conflict is usually maybe a dilemma, maybe a trilemma. Dilemma means you have like two things, you know. Sometimes it's a avoidance, sometimes it's approach. Sometimes approach avoidance. I mean, these are different analyses of different types of conflicts. When I was at the university studying conflicts, that is, you know, you have analysis like approach. Approach means you want to do two things. You know, someone says, "Would you like to go see the Star Wars movie? Or would you like to go to Kirtan tonight?" That's a conflict. And avoidance is, you know, when your mother says, "Would you like to get a
a spanking on your rear end, or would you like to get hit on your hands or something like that? That's avoidance, avoidance. And in this particular case, you have basically approach, because the Dravasa Muni has come, and he wants to wait for Dravasa Muni. I mean, it's a combination. And he also wants to break the fast. So he has two things he wants to do. Both things, he can't do both simultaneously. So he comes up with a solution. And the solution is in accordance with the Vedic rules. And we find in the Mahabharata that there's, where's Prabhupada? States that Maharaj Ambarish is very intelligent. He came up with this. The Brahmins actually couldn't decide what was the proper course of action. But a devotee, Maharaj Ambarish, is extremely intelligent. He comes up with something that satisfies both needs. Of course, Dravasa Muni didn't appreciate that, as we're going to read later on. But in the Mahabharata, we find many instances of this type of conflict, where you have contradictory instructions or contradictory desires, and the person is being tested. Generally, in the Mahabharata, it's Arjuna who's being tested in this particular way. I mean, one time, one story is from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and also from the Mahabharata. When you have Ashwatthama, he killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi. And he was thinking he actually was killing the Pandavas, because he went into the camp after the battle of Kurukshetra, after Duryodhana was maimed. Duryodhana was actually still lying there with his broken thigh and writhing in pain. And Aswatthama, he went to Duryodhana and he said, "I'm going to satisfy you by killing the five Pandavas." So being empowered, it's an interesting story in the Mahabharata that he was empowered by Lord Shiva, because there were guards around the Pandavas camp, and the Pandavas weren't there. They were out celebrating somewhere else. But there were guards around the Pandavas camp, and he couldn't get in. So he did some sort of a sacrifice, the Mahabharata describes this, and he got empowered by the potency of Lord Shiva, you know, the destructive potency of Lord Shiva. And he was able to pierce through the guards, kill all the guards, and kill everybody in the camp, including Drisadunya, Uttamajal, and so many of the, everybody in the camp was killed. He was like the fire of destruction at the time of the universal dissolution. So he also killed who he thought were the five Pandavas, but with the five sons of Pandavas, and he cut their heads off. And he brought their heads to Duryodhana to satisfy him. And Prabhupada tells the story that Duryodhana tested the heads to see if they were actually the heads of the Pandavas. He touched them, and if they were the heads of the Pandavas, they wouldn't have, like, crumpled up. But because they were the heads of the five sons of the Pandavas, they crumpled up. And it's described that Duryodhana was disappointed, because he wanted the dynasty to continue. He knew that he was dead, and the only person who could continue, the only person who could continue the dynasty were the sons of the Pandavas. Of course, he probably didn't know that Parikshit Maharaj was in the womb of Uttara. He probably didn't know that, but at least so far. So then he died in disappointment. The Mahabharata movie is not accurate in that regard, because it shows that Duryodhana was happy, but he wasn't when he died. He was actually extremely miserable. So, anyway, getting back to the story. So Arjuna, he said to Draupadi that, "I'm going to kill this person." And Krishna said, "It's your duty to kill him. We're going to present a conflict to you." So they go after Ashwatthama, and they capture him. And, of course, in that particular instance, Ashwatthama fires the Brahmastra arrow at Arjuna. And in this particular case, Arjuna was able to retrieve Ashwatthama's Brahmastra, according to the Bhagavatam story. Bhagavatam story is a little bit different than what we read in the Mahabharata, but we take the Bhagavatam as actually more bona fide than any other literature, because the Bhagavatam has been passed down to civil succession, untouched, whereas the Mahabharata and some other literatures have been changed throughout the ages. So he retrieves both Brahmastras and Arjuna, because Ashwatthama didn't know how to retrieve his own Brahmastra, captures Arjuna, and he's angry, and Krishna, this is right, Krishna's eyes are just like flaming red with anger, his lotus eyes, which are normally beautiful. They're always beautiful, but even his anger is beautiful. So, and they drag Ashwatthama back. And as soon as Draupadi sees Ashwatthama, she becomes rather sentimental. She says that basically he's a Brahmin, he's the son of the Brahmin. And she gives some philosophical arguments too, that you know, you can't kill Brahmanas. If you kill him, then Kripi, who is his mother, who is Kripacharya's sister, and also the wife of Dronacharya, who been killed in the battle of Kurukshetra, she will be left without anybody. And so she gives all these arguments. In the purport, of course, he talks about sentimentality or the soft-heartedness of women. And she's not wrong, actually. And because she gives all these arguments, basically, Krishna changes his mind. So you see, actually, it's interesting. Sometimes people get accused for changing their mind under certain circumstances, but Krishna changes his mind. Because Krishna agreed with Draupadi. Yudhisthira Maharaj agreed with Draupadi. And even Arjuna agreed with Draupadi. And the Kulan Sahadev agreed with Draupadi. But guess who did? Bhima. He said, Yakiru! And so Arjuna was caught in the horns of a dilemma again. Again, this dilemma. And so Arjuna was thinking, you know, I gotta kill him. So then Arjuna did something very intelligent. He, you know, cut the jewel out of his head, and that way it was like killing and not killing simultaneously. So he was able to accomplish both goals. And then there's a dilemma, and he was able to meet both goals in that particular instance. And of course, one can also say that was a little bit of a mistake, too. Because later on, Ashwatthama fired another Brahmastra, and that was fired at Uttara's son. And that was Pariksit. And Pariksit, of course. But then on the other hand, that was meant to be, because Krishna actually revived Pariksit, or sometimes it's described, gave him another body. His body was destroyed and gave him another body. And it was second birth, so to speak. So he got purified. He got his body from Krishna, which is very interesting. So there's one instance of Arjuna solving a problem, a dilemma, just like Ambarish Maharaj was being confronted with. Another instance in the Mahabharata is the when Jayadrath, of course, was Dushala's husband, and he was inspired by Duryodhana to kidnap Draupadi when the Pandavas were in exile. So he kidnapped Draupadi, and of course he wasn't successful, and he was dragged back. And there was a question, should we kill him or not? And, you know, you're supposed to kill him. Someone who kidnaps your wife, right? There's different injunctions in the Vedic literature, like someone who sets fire, someone who gives poison, someone who kidnaps your wife, they can be killed. But because he was the sort of like the brother-in-law of the Pandavas, therefore he shouldn't be killed. So he had this dilemma again. And so what they did is they gave him a haircut. You know, they cut off, gave him five little sikas on his head to remind him of the Pandavas. There's another dilemma Arjuna solved. You know, he used his arrow, and he actually gave him a shave, you know, with five little. And of course, Jayadrath later became really angry. Started to perform austerities to Lord Shiva, became so powerful that he was able to defeat all the Pandavas except for one day. And he also got, his father also got the benediction that anyone who calls, anyone who caused his head to drop to the ground, Jayadrath's head to drop to the ground, would also die. So later on, of course, we know in the Mahabharata that Krishna was so intelligent, he advised Arjuna, when Arjuna was finally was killing Jayadrath, to cut Jayadrath's head off and cause Jayadrath's head to fall into the lap of his father. And his father was the one who dropped the head on the ground, and his father was the one who died. He just went in self-immolation. So there's another instance of the dilemma that Arjuna solved. You know, of course, there was problems afterwards. And there was one really heavy dilemma in the that's described in the Mahabharata, not in the Bhagavatam, where Arjuna had vowed that anyone who insulted the Gandiva bull, he would kill immediately. So, you know, this is very heavy. So he had taken this vow. And vows are taken very seriously. As we see with Maharaj Ambarish, he's taking his vow very seriously. He's not saying, you know, yeah, it's not important, this Brahman has come. But, you know, a promise is considered extremely important in the Vedic culture. And, of course, his vow was to follow the traditional method of observing Ekadashi. Traditional method is the day before Ekadashi, you eat very little, just once. And the day after Ekadashi, you eat very little, just once. You know, you break the fast, just very lightly, and that's it for the whole day. That's actually the traditional method, which we don't follow. If you like, you can follow it. I don't follow it. Anyway, so he, Arjuna had taken this vow that whoever insulted his famous Gandiva bow, he would kill him immediately. So one day, Yudhisthira Maharaj, in the Battle of Kurukshetra, during the Battle of Kurukshetra, Yudhisthira Maharaj got injured. And he went back to the camp to recuperate. And Arjuna was very worried about Yudhisthira Maharaj. So he went back to see what was happening with Yudhisthira Maharaj. And Yudhisthira Maharaj was very angry that Arjuna had left the battlefield. He said, "So what is the use of you? You know, insult of the Gandiva bow. What is the use of your Gandiva bow that you left the battlefield? You know, just like you're being a lugabad, your life, you're a coward." And Arjuna said, "Well, I've taken this vow. I have to kill Yudhisthira." And so, what happened at that particular point is Krishna said, "That's not really a good idea. You got to figure a way to take care of this particular conflict." And Krishna actually was the one who gave him a solution at this particular point. He said, "If you insult your brother, that's like killing him. So strong was the culture, so let's say defined was the culture at that particular point, that even if you insulted someone who's considered, if someone who was superior, it was considered like killing them." And the way that he insulted them was very interesting too. He simply used the informal "you." In English, of course, we just have "you." And sometimes people come from countries where they, like in Latin America, where they have the formal "you" and the informal "you." They become shocked that we're just saying "you." You know, "Can you come here?" You know, you say, "What do you want, Gurudev?" It's, "Oh my God, how can they call Gurudev you?" Anyway, so, because the informal is meant just simply for when someone is lower than you, like a child, you say, "Oh, my dear little you." And the formal is meant for someone who's higher than you, like usted in Spanish, anyway. So, in Hindi, it's the same. Most cultured languages, you actually have a difference between the two U's. But English is simply businessman's language, so you don't need that when you're doing business. French and Spanish are languages more of love and poetry, so you need that. Like, two, you know, if you say two to zone, it's just like, it's really familiar. Anyway, so You know, the husband would say to his wife, "Who's dead?" He'd say, "Dude." Anyway, so getting back to the point. So Arjuna, he insulted Yudhisthira by using the informal "you." He said, "You!" Like this. And that was solved half the problem. But he also had another problem because he had insulted Yudhisthira. He thought, you know, I've committed such a great offense. This is how strong the culture was, that I should kill myself, commit suicide. And so Krishna said, that's not a good idea either. So you can actually kill yourself in polite culture, polite society, by bragging about yourself. You understand? So Krishna said, you better brag about yourself. And that's like killing yourself. So Arjuna said, I am the great Arjuna. Wonderful. Nobody can defeat me. I am wonderful. Actually, it's considered very low class to talk about your own glories or to brag. Bragging is considered very, very low class. You know, I'm great. I'm wonderful. And of course, it's a sign of false ego, basically. One could say what they did, but if they start bragging about what they did, that's not very good. So anyway, so Arjuna was able to deal with that particular dilemma without killing Yudhisthira and without killing himself by doing a win-win. Or lose-lose in the game, maybe. Anyway, but so here Amrish Maharaj is stuck in the horns of a dilemma. And we also are many times stuck in the horns of a dilemma. And we have to do what pleases Krishna. I mean, sometimes we can't actually solve it in the sense of satisfying both aspects of the dilemma. Like, for example, sometimes, let's say Prabhupada, for example, before he came to the West, there was a dilemma, you know, should I leave Vrindavan? I'm getting old. And all everybody was saying, you know, you should not leave Vrindavan when you're very old. Because you don't know when you're going to die. And then Prabhupada had the order of the spiritual masters. So in that particular case, the order of the spiritual masters took precedence over his concern, you know, for leaving Vrindavan or even concern for his own bodily welfare. And I was speaking to someone yesterday about that. They have a particular job where they can't do devotional service, but they don't have a family to maintain or anything like that. But they can't do devotional service. They're not really happy in their job. But they're afraid, you know, if they give up their job, then how will they be maintained, even though they have so much money in the bank and they have social security coming in, how will they be maintained? And then I told them a story about how Prabhupada came to the Western world not, you know, depending on Krishna. And, you know, even in the Bible, I forget the exact quote, you know, that Jesus Christ talks about the lilies in the field, they're well dressed. Like that. The birds in the sky, you know, they get food. And of course, we have this nitya, nitya, nam, chaitanya, chaitanya, nam, eko, bohunam, yo, tadadati, kamam, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Eternal. And he's maintaining all the plural eternals since time immemorial. Anyway, so we many times have to deal with these particular dilemmas. And we should do, we don't always have a win-win like Arjuna has. So sometimes we have to pick one side over the other. So that is our test. Srivatsa Muni may not come to us, but we get tested in many ways.